So thank you so much. Lisa had suggested this session, I think back over the break. I actually attended one in the fall that the dean had on open educational resources, which was really interesting. I'll leave it to you guys to give whatever background or whatever else you think we need to sort of set this up. Just take it away, ladies and gentlemen.
Did you want to explain, Mary, that the projector didn't show up, so
yes.
Caitlin
yes.
sent
so,
a slide
yes.
to everybody?
Got,
and maybe
yeah, so we're looking at a slideshow. Is there anything over here? You can look at
my call.
That's quite all right. You can look on mine.
Yeah.
Let me see where it is. Okay. Yeah, I don't know what's going on out there. Here we go. Thank you. Does anybody else need the laptop?
No.
A laptop? Okay, so slideshow from the beginning.
Folks, I'll just add at the end, there's little slips here for an online survey at the end of the presentation.
Cool.
You can fill it out, so just save that till the end. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Caitlin Kanamiri. I'm the Access Services Librarian at Welsh Library, which means I work with interlibrary loans, circulation, and book stack maintenance. And
I'm Jerry Shea. I'm the Communication Librarian. I'm also a liaison to co-liaison to education and English. And this is This topic is both dear and near to
and thank you all for coming and going along with technical fun today.
Teach us patience.
Yeah. So one of the first things we wanted to do was just ask you all, like, what do you think about open education resources, or what comes to mind when people talk about open education resources?
Cost.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Happy students. Happy students.
Happy students.
Happy students. Happy students. I like that one.
Happy students. Happy professor.
Yes. 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 Yes.
Anyone else?
I think of the resources that Lisa shows us in a presentation, the science classes that are open to the students already for research purposes, journals, articles.
Shall we tell her the catch with that?
Oh, what is it?
The library actually pays a huge amount
of
money
for
them.
Oh, I know that.
Oh, you mean when we look at the government sites and so on?
Yeah, right? No, I meant what's already available to our students.
Oh,
I know it costs a lot.
So
I just explained that to my son who had to use his university's database, and I said, well, I can't access that. Mm-hmm. I can't help you there. Sorry.
That's part of it, yeah.
And I do think that's part of it. Like, there's a basic understanding that we might have that students might not have about what is open and what is, you know, I think that there's a lot that people consider to be open that might not actually be open. So in the, I think it's slide 3, I've turned it around so I can actually read it. An OER is an educational resource that is licensed under an open license and made freely available online to the public. The important part of that, especially, is the open license. An open license is a worldwide, royalty-free, non-exclusive, perpetual, irrevocable, it's always fun to put words I can't say in the presentation, copyright license granting the public permission to access, reproduce, publicly perform, public display, adapt, distribute, or otherwise use work and adapt adaptations of the work for any purpose, conditioned only on the requirement that attribution be given to the authors as designated. That is a very, very long definition that we're going to try and break down a little bit too, but it's a very important definition for open education resources. It's what allows you to take something and build on it, especially, and modify it so that, you know, I only need this chapter, and I want to revise it for my class, and then you can redistribute it without having to pay royalties. And an open textbook is an open educational resource or set of open educational resources that can be used in place of a textbook for a post-secondary course at an institution of higher education. And part of the reason we're defining it is because of those issues where people say, oh, I found this thing and it's freely available and it's open. Not maybe realizing they're going through an institutional login, that it is being paid for by someone. We really want to emphasize the fact that it doesn't matter if you are at this institution or another institution, you are still able to access these materials. So why are we doing this? Why is this important? There's a couple of reasons, I think, especially for Jerry and I's motivation.
Students
are paying more and more for textbooks and tuition. This is a great physical demonstration at NCSU of how much students are paying. You notice a couple of the dots are over the thousands.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And I think my favorite part is actually underneath where they talk about what they do. And someone has written LibGen, and if LibGen, if you're not aware, is the book side of Sci-Hub, essentially, where they store all the things that they've stolen. So they're accessing stolen materials. You can see that the cost of textbooks has risen against the price, the consumer price index.
One other thing is if they have to have, at least on my subject, an access code,
yes,
they can't get used. They can't get, it targets them into books that are very expensive. Or packaged very expensive.
Yes, yeah. And that's, I mean, I see that a lot on the interlibrary side of things. Like, we want to try and help students that are looking for books that are very expensive, but they don't come with those codes. And so they're kind of back at square one. They're just back at being frustrated. They're just back at being overwhelmed.
And Martha, that's a really good point that you raised. This is particularly in the sciences.
Yes.
That the and student's business. Buying a textbook, business. But what the publisher's selling, the textbook that you hold in your hand, is only a small part of the package that they're marketing, which is all these online resources.
Yes.
And that's where the publishers are really having a captive audience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My business students complain. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So firstly, it's you know, really expensive.
Yeah. Right, so you might, as Martha says, you might have the physical book,
right. Yeah,
but you
don't
have access to the package unless you've got it purchased it new.
New.
And so, this is a chart that Jerry and I found about what students spent in New Jersey schools per year, seeing how students spend an average of $1,000 on textbooks per year. That is an estimate. Like, we don't, every school is required to give an estimate of what they think students spend. There doesn't necessarily have to be very scientific in their exploration of textbook costs.
Yeah, it's a really nice round number.
Yeah. But you can see it. And it, you know, it runs the gamut from $1,900 to $1,000. You know, there's no rhyme or reason, or $2,400, I guess, at Rider is the most expensive. Really does run the gamut of what students are expected to take on. And so how do these students cope with the cost? They purchase an older edition of the textbook, delay purchasing the textbook, never purchase the textbook, share the textbook with other students, or download illegal textbooks from the internet.
I have a student this semester who is sharing the textbook.
Yes.
He's taking pictures with his phone
of
the pages,
mm-hmm.
and then turning them into Word documents. Because I asked him, I said, okay, he's been struggling with the reading.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I need to see what this thing looks like. And it actually isn't bad, but he can't mark it up. He
mm-hmm.
can't annotate it.
Yes.
I mean, not that they're marking up their books either. But this was a first for me, taking pictures of readers.
I've had
freedom fighter.
He's
a freedom fighter.
They rebel against it, and they are not buying the textbook.
Yeah,
that
happens.
Sharing doesn't, I've had sharing too, and if they're not roommates, it's difficult.
Right. Yeah.
So, and then the next chart gives you an idea of, like, they've not purchased the textbook, taken fewer courses, not registered for a specific class, dropped a course, failed a course. I can tell you, I have student workers, and I did a training with them in August before class started, and we walked through the course reserves, and we looked at what we had so that they know how to talk to their students. And in front of me, they're saying, oh, don't buy that book. You don't need it, basically. You know, like, you can make it through without it.
Right.
Yeah. I was at the grocery store one day, and a cashier was talking to another cashier about how her course book was $400 and she was just going to drop the class. And that was at Jersey City Community College, or Hudson County Community College.
Right.
You know, you're just like, this is what, these are conversations they're having. I mean, they're obviously having them with all of you if you all are, they're
mm-hmm.
having this conversation a lot, unfortunately. And you can see that tuition funding versus state funding for higher education is quite the depressing flip-flop with the numbers.
Yeah, New Jersey especially.
Yeah, New Jersey. And this is just for New Jersey. Like, we looked at the other states, and it's a little more, it's not quite as drastic. New Jersey is very, very drastic.
To the extent we even get state
funding. Yeah, and to the extent that we even get state funding.
But I think this is kind of the context for why OER is so important, because students are paying more out of pocket. So that's why the law is coming. There's a new law we'll talk about later. But the law, that's kind of context of the law.
Right. Yeah.
Costs are up all across the board now in books.
Yeah, the higher education funding, that's true. That drop has been true across the country, right?
Yes.
The other graphs are not quite as stark in the flip-flop.
No.
They're like this, they run a little more parallel as
to. Yeah, New Jersey is actually one of the worst.
Yeah. Okay. So what can we do? You know, there's tuition and fees, room and board, books and supplies, personal expenses, and transportation. We all can control books and supplies in this room. We can't really control tuition, and we can't control transportation, as I don't think any of us wants to go up against NJ Transit or any of those people in New Jersey. So, adopting OER resources can help students in the most perfectly timed article last Friday. We got, I found something about how it helps students complete college, and students who took multiple OER-based classes managed to earn 3 more credits than their peers, and the two groups' cumulative GPAs were similar. And that's what they found, that the GPAs are very similar. I don't, you know, like, I think everyone wants the GPAs to be better, but the fact that they're similar and we're saving money and we're making less life less stressful is a huge win. So
that should be a live link on that slide.
So if you want to read this article. What about OERs? There are some concerns with OERs. Are there concerns that you all might have with OERs in the classroom?
What we're interested in doing in our first year writing program is relatively new, and there may not be any open source books that deal with the rhetorical genre approach to teaching first year writing. I mean, it's not brand new, but it's, you know, it's less apt to be represented.
Yeah, well, that's a very valid concern. Like, I won't be able to find what I need.
Right. I think, like, to that concern, like, across programs too, I use a lot of open resources, but then I don't necessarily give them to other people who are teaching in the class. So it would have to be structured. Like, I guess we would have to create a Blackboard shell and populate it with resources. Otherwise, we're just saying, use free materials, but not necessarily telling people where to find them.
Right.
Or having a consistent...
We can help with that, because I've done that, not in Blackboard, just lists for the sciences. I mean, that's certainly something that we...
Yeah.
Jerry, in particular, is The other thing is that... one of the things, we'll see this when we get to the end, of pushing for some support for this, is being able to write your own.
Right.
Yeah. Assuming that one could get time and money.
Right.
Time.
Funding. Right.
You know, that's the flip side of this, is encouraging people to actually contribute material.
Any other concerns with OERs?
The one that came up recently in an email conversation, you might be doing this later though, about the quality, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So is that something we're going to talk about later on?
Yeah. And so,
okay.
You know, these are the concerns that most people, you know, what you said here are the concerns that most people have about incorporating them into the classroom.
Okay.
That free does not equal good. I mean, we all, I think, are conditioned a little bit to worry about free things.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, is what we are discussing now, is that the same that Widener Library, Harvard or Widener Library, has all the articles from faculty, for example, that publish at Harvard?
Oh, and
they give open access. Is that the same principle, or is it, again, like...
Yes and no. Like, open access, open is a big umbrella, so there's, you know, open technology, open access, which tends to refer more towards articles, open education resources or textbooks. But it all falls under a little bit of that making resources accessible to researchers who need them, especially. So yeah, if you have a preprint and you put it on the IR, you're saying you don't need to pay, you know, you might not need to have the institutional login for Science Direct or whatever. You know, and there's other, like PubMed, you know, for medical or PubMed Central.
That's not so much for the two, but what I found extremely helpful is this Internet Archive. I mean, any obscure thing from the 16th and 17th century, it's really horrible, and it's great.
There is a lot of different organizations that are really working to expand what we have access to, and that's part of it. That's the reality, is like, it's not just current things. It's also, you can find older material that's been digitized that's in the public domain.
Yeah.
There's a big push to expand what the public domain is.
Is this the time to say maybe a tiny bit about copyright, which is one of the reasons that publishers are able to charge enormous prices for what burns us, our own product?
Yeah.
Is because when you publish with a commercial publisher, typically you sign over your copyright and they own it, unless you specify you're going to publish open access. And it's not so bad in the humanities, but in the sciences, publishing your article open access usually costs in excess of $2,500. And who of us
has that money?
But what you're referring to and what Caitlin's talking about in the public domain, in most cases, things pre-1923, pre-1924,
we gave a whole year,
typically in the public domain, unless they've had their license renewed in some crafty manner by a publisher who's aggregated them or something. So this is a good time to plug that if anybody ever has copyright questions, to reach out to us.
No, that's a great, and that's what can be tricky navigating all of this, is copyright and understanding where, you know, is this open, is this copyright, where did this come from? And some of the resources we'll show you will help alleviate that, like, kind of like where you just kind of throw everything to the wind and hope you find the right resource kind of thing. So some of the other concerns are authority. Is this written by someone who's knowledgeable? Is it accessible in multiple formats? Is it, you know, ADA compliant? You know, questions we have. There are no test banks, PowerPoints, or other ancillary stuff, especially the sciences. I know Lisa's talked about that a lot. Like, you need the models and other things to go with it. And that it takes time to change the syllabus.
Yeah.
When we all magically have 28 hours a day at work.
Yeah, that's right.
But remember, like, I don't know for others, but in my discipline, they come out with a new edition every 2 years.
Okay.
Sometimes in 6 months they come out with a new edition. And it's like, you are updating a lot.
Yeah. The good thing, or the flip side with the OER, not that I'm saying everything's perfect. Well, a couple of things. More and more they are starting to come up with resources, at least in the sciences. And again, I apologize, this is largely applicable more to the sciences and health sciences, where they have all these supplemental materials, but that's been the big objection. And also, Professor Nick Snow in chemistry, who's working on an OER text in his sabbatical, said a lot of the supporting materials that are up there are not very good. So I, always liking to poke at other people, said, well, Nick, you've got a sabbatical, why don't you write your own? Which he is actually in the process of doing. So one of the things with most of these open texts, which Caitlin's going to show in a bit, is there are opportunities to edit and to review and to make comments, because the whole idea why Caitlin read that huge big lumpy licensing thing, which is basically the Creative Commons no restrictions license, is that you can take course material that somebody else has prepared and you can edit it to your purposes, and you can put it back up again and offering it to other people, and all the original author is going to ask is that you credit them with the original resource. So it's a very flexible, equitable system that way.
I got two emails when this came out. So one was from Rory Murphy, who said he is in fact using an open source textbook, and the other one was from Jeff Levy on Psych, who has also produced, so his textbook in Psych is also open access. So again, you know, I don't know.
So, and that's, I think,
how good they are or whatever, but
I think one of the things that's happening on campus that we don't realize is that there are a lot of people using OERs, and they're just—it's just in their coursework.
Right.
So you wouldn't know. I know I've taken a class on statistics that was all OER material. As a student, I have to say it was great to be able to start the class off without having to like scramble to get the book the first week. Just to be able to get the material right away was—I didn't feel like I was behind for the first time. But you talk to people and you're like, oh, I didn't know they were using that, and I didn't know they were using that. And I think the more we talk about it, the more we find out, oh, you've already just incorporated it. It's not an other, it's just what you use.
I only found out about Rory's book because we were chatting one day in the UCOB, and he said, oh, yeah. And now the chemistry faculty for Gen Chem, which three professors teach in multiple sections, it's over 400 students. They're going with an open text. But I'm not saying there isn't work involved.
Right.
The other thing that I'm thinking about is, and we confront even this issue, even if it's with the standard, you know, the regular textbook, and that is, to what extent are we just giving up on saying students should read things that are in print as opposed to online? You know, as opposed to the electronic version, you know, a lot of varying, I guess, you know, research shows different things about this, but it's something that's of concern to some of the faculty.
Some to us, but
yeah, some of the materials are they're open, they're electronic, and they have an option on Amazon to have them printed. So it's $35 for that science textbook, as opposed to $200. Sure. So you can still get print versions often. It's not like we're confined to electronic. You know, they can print it at the and in libraries to have that print material versus the electronic print material. There are options. It's not limited just to electronic, which is really nice.
And Amazon can print on demand, right?
Yep.
So it's like you don't have to stockpile.
Yep.
Stockpile books. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like you request and they print it out for you and bound it and through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
so
great
if it's an
service.
Accessibility issue too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think one of the best things to do is to take some time and look at some of these materials. Normally we kind of show you and then break you all off to let you play a bit. I have a feeling once we start. You start to see it, if we lose you, that's totally fine. Don't feel like you have to come back to the presentation. We've done this before with other people, and like I can watch them just like drift off, and I'm like, it's cool, we don't have to talk. So you can see that there's the OER resources for writing down, jotting down. We are trying to cultivate a list. We're trying to make a list for each discipline, so if you want to give us some suggestions for that list. So the first one is the Open Textbook Library.
Oh, okay, thanks. Oh, we got one already. I didn't see that one. Okay, thank you.
The Open Textbook Library is really great. It's very multidisciplinary. Some of the other ones we'll look at are more science or more humanities. This one really kind of runs the gamut. It takes a lot of different resources and puts them into, I'm going to say, an easier user experience. You know, it makes it like so you can navigate it a lot faster, easier. So who would like to, I guess you could all go into each your departments and look for a second. I might just go into accounting and financing to show you some of the different covers and titles. You know what we should search for? We found that research materials do need help.
What slide are we on?
We are on,
let's take a look.
Yes.
Let's send your own area. Where would I find my own area?
Though this is the only fun thing about having to send slides around. Jared, do you want to?
Yeah.
Oh, I can help. I say, do you want to? There's a couple other resources on that list. OpenStax has some great stuff, and it especially has the
Ansler
for sciences. It's got PowerPoints. It's got other things you have to sign in as an instructor in order to get them. It's not just free for everyone. You have to prove that you.
Right.
You're the instructor,
okay.
Which is really great. There's also the Mason OER Finder.
That's Federated Search.
Yeah, it's a Federated Search. It searches HathiTrust. It searches Library of Congress, OpenStax, Open Textbook. It's got a lot of great resources. New Jersey is, Vail, the New Jersey Academic Library, is working on OpenNJ. It's the last one. So if you do make something, they would love it if you put it up there. So there's a repository for New Jersey resources as well. Part of the reason we're doing this is because there was a new law that was passed in New Jersey. It's slide 18, basically. NJA 327, which says that school of higher education must submit a plan on how they plan to expand the use of open textbooks. We've been working on it in the library. We've been working, you know, this part of this workshop is part of how we plan to expand the understanding of open textbooks and having people incorporate them in classrooms. So we don't want to just limit it to having a plan, though. We really do want to help students succeed. It's shown that these can help students succeed in classroom. And it's exponential savings for students. If you change it for one semester or you have a class of 400 and the textbook is $200, you're just increasing the savings.
Yeah.
2 years in a row, it's a lot of money you're saving people.
And if they pay for it with their loans,
yeah,
plus the interest on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I have a general question. So if, for example, in my case, if I'm teaching ethics and if I want to use a textbook, then I'm using primary sources, which are either chapters from other, you know, books,
mm-hmm.
or articles. So would that ever be on open access because they are already taken from books that are copyrighted and articles from journals that are copyrighted. So would I ever be able to access these sources and provide them? Or would I always have to, what I now try to do is copy them, only stick to the copyright law and then put it up on Blackboard on the eReserve?
So Lisa actually dealt with this question last semester, mm-hmm. which was someone wanted to use an essay that was published in an anthology. Mm-hmm. The essay itself had fallen out of copyright. The anthology was in copyright, but you could use the essay because the essay had fallen out of copyright.
Yeah, but then we are on everything prior to 1924, right? That was what
you said. Well, yes, and there's been some expansion. Like, people are trying to figure out how to expand the public domain in different ways. Orphan works, they're really pushing on the orphan, you know, things that don't have an owner. Like, all right, no one's coming, you know? So there are people that are trying to push the public domain a little bit.
Okay.
The short answer is basically we'd have to investigate the copyright.
Yeah.
One. The other thing that you can do, depending how big of a work it is, because one of the four factors in fair use is how much of a work you're using.
Yes.
So say it's a 120-page document,
right.
And you're only taking like 10 pages or so.
How many are we now, 30?
There is no hard and fast. That's a. People love to say there's a hard and fast rule. The rule of thumb is a chapter out of a book or 10%, but it is very much a rule of thumb. For example, I've had this again in the science domain where the instructor wants to put various chapters of a book up on reserve so the students don't have to buy a $200 book. And I say, well, first of all, the introduction, what this book is about, really doesn't count. There's no, you know, there's not actual material there. Oftentimes there'll be very standard chapters which are very much the same from one book to another. And I'll say, well, couldn't you just take that from a different source and put something together? The problems arise when there's a couple of chapters that are really original to that particular work. And in your case, if you're talking about translations, copyright gets but hey, we're happy to work on.
Yeah.
I love students' copyright questions. That anthology one took me weeks to track down.
I think this is a perfect conversation for we had to skip playtime. You all got playtime before. What would you need in order to put some of these materials into your syllabus? And I think that's part of it, is like making sure that I'm navigating copyright, that I understand how to properly use copyright. And that's really what we're here for, to help you navigate all of these resources and copyright, because it is confusing and it is overwhelming. And I just look to Lisa to solve all my problems.
Well, Lisa is not a copyright expert, although I am chair of the copyright committee. But I have friends who are copyright experts if I get jammed up. Would this be a time, and not to talk negative, but I did promise Marianne Lloyd that I would bring up her concerns to the group, that, and Caitlin already sort of touched on this, saying that not everything is good just because it's free. There's a certain level of discernment needed in this. I definitely draw attention to the reviews on the open textbook. When I put my list together to send to my liaison faculty, I looked at the reviews, and if there were more than a couple of reviews that said something substantially bad about the book, I wouldn't send it. But the concern that she brought up, and this is an interesting one, this is in clinical psych, or was it in intro psych? Do you remember? Anyway, it was in psych. That there was a study done, apparently Seton Hall participated in this study, where they compared outcomes for students using an OER text and a standard textbook, and they didn't say what the books actually were, so I couldn't look at them. And the finding that Marianne was concerned about was that the students who had the open textbook did worse on an actual test. However, I looked at the results pretty closely, and it also said that the students who had the open text thought that they learned more and enjoyed their reading more. To me, that's sort of like a how do you measure outcomes kind of thing. And the kicker was that half the students failed anyway, regardless of the text. Because I'm not dumping.
And I started writing a response to that effect back to say, I think outcomes-based, frankly, the students in my class are all supposed to be buying the book.
I think trying to base the outcomes on whether they actually own the book or not, whatever else they're doing, I would have a really hard time giving any validation to that, because there are so many other variables.
Including whether online variables.
Right. Well, and by the way, that's true. And I agree with that. I mean, I like paper. I've gotten much more used to having my students work online, but as long as they can mark it up somehow, I feel like that's sort of the one link back to the actual text. But honestly, so there are other variables. The kid who can't buy the book, right, for whatever reason. I'm going to say the kid who financially can't buy the book. Is that kid struggling because he is actually working 40 hours a week, which is the reason he can't buy the book, because he has no money, right? I mean, I want to know what else is going on in that kid's life. Mm-hmm. Is the kid deciding to not buy the book because, how, I just don't, my book? It's big and fat. Oh, yeah. Big and fat. They just don't want it. And they take one look at it, because some people had it the first thing, like, damn, I'm not buying that thing. I'm not dragging that around with me around campus. I have to drag. In fact, one day I wasn't going to bring it to class. I'd be like, so that's a bad example. I mean, I had the text electronically, and I had my book. I brought the book, and I told them. I said, I have my book. Anyway, so I think I absolutely understand her concern and all that, but I think there are just so many other variables in their lives besides whether it's. I didn't even send this email. How do we know about the quality of the actual hardcover books we're using?
It was when I read the actual scores that I became rather disillusioned with that study. Mm-hmm. But I do have another paper which I'm happy to share, which pointed out sometimes that with comparison with these OERs too, and this is partly what Mary said, what you've really got to look at is the difference between having the OER and not having the book at all.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, exactly.
It depends on the circumstances.
Right. Well, I mean, as I read, I read the reviews in Amazon for a book I may be considering using, or wherever else I'm using, probably Amazon more likely. But, I'm sorry, I also know the people who have gotten their friends to write reviews of their books in Amazon. I'm sorry, I mean, I love this book, but it is big, fat, double columns on every page. Yeah, I like the introductions. There are other people who find it very, very PC. And so, which is one of the reasons I like it, because it tells a different narrative of early America. It's an early American lit class and text. But, yeah, so I think there are lots. I'd want more research, and Ed, you are our assessment, our outcomes person that I turn to.
I had that question too. Those populations, I was wondering, what are the qualities of those two different populations? Because it might be more than just that one variable.
Right.
As Mary is suggesting.
Yeah, I mean, one of them obviously would be if they're using a traditional print text versus an OER online text, right there, you've got another big variable in there.
Right.
Ed has taught me that.
I have a question. Yes.
I'll send the paper around, because I'd love to have other people's opinions on it. I wasn't that blown away by it myself. But
I have a question about, this is really eye-opening to me, that Seton Hall needs a plan by 2020 to address this new law. Doesn't that suggest that, sort of like what you were asking about Nick to do, and Mary, you might address this too, to what extent should this be a good reason to grant sabbaticals for us to write open
It's like you all are... It's like we've prepped you all for this presentation.
We show them the dean's plan.
How much
do I owe you, Ed?
That's right.
Yeah. We can make this turn into
something useful. One of the things that we want to, because we know that you all need support to do this. And that article that I linked to earlier, a large part of that article is about labor. The reality is, like, the labor it takes to, they're not free in some ways because it takes labor.
Right.
So what support would you need to adopt OERs in class?
Sabbatical.
That's part of our survey, because we would like to be able to say that.
Yeah.
Course release.
Yeah, course release, sabbatical, we'll take everything.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the other, it's a slightly different angle, but I'm also thinking, there's supposed to be a plan. There is a law. We need to be moving forward. Thank you all for coming, but there should be a lot more people here. And we're doing it at IHS too again, but I'm wondering whether, we should talk about maybe trying to do another session where we specifically spearhead, say, department chairs and program directors and say, listen, there is a law, and get their deans to come, because people really need to be thinking about this. You know, you try to push it out there in a way that's more honey than vinegar, if you will, but it's, you know, it's just, you know, it's very frustrating to me, because I feel like this is a really important issue, and we need to address it. So,
did you get on the chair's agenda?
So, well, I was thinking about that, trying to get it on chairs' agendas for meetings, trying to get it on college agendas, too, for their meetings. It's hard to get spots on the college meetings.
Well, I will say, can I drop a little drop in the bucket here? First of all, I don't know if John copied it on you, because I think you're actually, we are now officially a committee.
Right.
And we have a charge, which was accepted, which anybody is welcome to join us. I think we also sort of volunteered you already, didn't we, Mary?
Of course you did.
No, you don't have. No,
that's okay. That's sort of a resource. That can be a resource for
you. Don't have to be.
I will buy the coffee and tea.
Anyway, our Dean Bushman actually just the other day, after we finished working on it, sent a draft memo to the provost, so it's now sitting on the provost's lap, and the basically saying we did all this stuff already, but the sting in the tail is,
you know what we got?
Unfortunately, he downgraded my listing things like sabbaticals and so on.
Right.
Sort of, if we want to move forward with this, we need institutional support.
I did get an email from Jonathan Farina asking for a few names for people to serve on a textbook cost savings textbook.
And I sent to Marta.
Gotcha.
Okay, we're having an issue here because
yep.
I really didn't want this kind of swept under Greg Burton's.
I know.
Yeah, enough said.
Yes.
So I said, well, let Jonathan know that we already have a committee and who's on it.
Right. Okay.
And John sent out to all of the library faculty the memorandum that he sent to the provost. So now I think it's sort of in Jonathan's court, you know, does he want a separate committee? Does he want to
As far as I know, they were just asking him for names, so sorry, Jim. Mean that you need to say yes. So they just asked us for a few minutes. What I actually did was I looked at the people, and I don't have a registration list. I just don't get one, and I wasn't able to access one. I'm sure there's a way to do it. I usually just count on the sign-in sheet because people, you know, often don't tell it. But so I put out, I said, Marianne Lloyd, Jim Daly, just people I knew had registered for this session. Jeff Upton, who's also an A&S, and Beth Jamison from nursing. So, again, I don't know if you're looking, those could be people you just reach out to moving forward. But anyway, so we did get this email for a committee of three.
Well, we already have a committee of six.
Yeah,
four.
I don't know what the heck he's thinking about. To work with him on textbook affordability and access via the library.
So, and that's one of the things. The way the law is written, it's actually written about promoting like access through commercial products and open education resources, which means that the school just ends up adopting that cost for that commercial resource. Like, you know, we need more subscriptions, we need more books, we would really like to just really promote the open education aspects because it's just taking the cost from the students at the bookstore and putting it eventually in tuition. The reality is, like, if we need to have it through the library, that just is increasing the cost later.
That, or they're losing something else, because the library budget hasn't increased in a decade, which means if we have to add something,
then we're cutting.
We have to take away something.
Right.
So we're doing a disservice to our students either way by just shifting the cost to the library.
I'm happy to help in any way I can, so just let you know.
Can I ask one question regarding this formulation? Must submit a plan to the Secretary of Higher Education to expand the use of open textbooks and commercial digital learning materials to achieve savings. But in a way, of course, we already achieve savings by sticking to the copyright and putting the stuff that's e-reserve on Blackboard, right? That should have they forgotten about that option, or when that law was formulated? Because it already exists, right? I mean, for free.
Right.
So when I do a course, I did a course on philosophy of medicine, everything I put up was all e-reserve.
But
and it
that's
was
paid
taken
for by the
from
library.
Very big books, and I stuck to the 10%, and I didn't have to pay.
if what you're doing is all open access, mm-hmm. absolutely, and I think that's mentioned in John's response,
yeah.
I'm not
mm-hmm.
sure, but in a lot of cases there,
yeah.
what people do, and absolutely no blame to people, because we encourage you to use course reserves, is what they're putting up there is something that's in a library database that we've actually paid for.
And are licensed to use.
Right,
yeah.
so it's
yeah.
not, so that's perfectly legitimate from a copyright point
mm-hmm.
of view, and it's not costing your students directly, but
so
it is a resource the library has already paid for.
Yeah.
And let me say,
okay.
some of these resources
I only was
are not
wondering,
cheap.
Whoever answers to this request
oh,
by
yeah.
the law could say, but this is already a savings for you know for the students.
Yeah. But I think what they, I mean, how we've worded it and how it's, too bad, I guess we could, well, ask John when we get back if we could send around this memorandum, but I think the provost is probably digesting it for a while because it only went out
yeah.
a little while ago, is we've already done a lot in terms of getting a committee, putting the word out there,
that's
getting
good.
The ball rolling.
Mm-hmm.
If you want us to do more, you have to put some institutional support behind
right.
it.
Right, absolutely.
Because
yeah.
People aren't going to do this on the love and...
It is 12:02.
Yes, right.
And I know everyone has else to do. Did anyone find something and go like, this is, I love this, it makes me so happy? People find things. Wants to volunteer and say they found.
We could let you know.
Yeah.
We have some time.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good. It makes me happy when people find the things they want. And there's a survey.
There's a survey.
Please fill out your survey, please.
Because it will help us. Yeah, it will help us help you give support.
And I'll also send a little like 3-question survey, just you know, for each. I'll send you something simple.
That was great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much,
yeah.
Caitlin. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
I'm just a
Okay,